just, I think you looked over at me and I was like,
moving on to like item 10.
Back of their shirts or something?
Discussion regarding the organizational and portfolio update from PIMCO. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. Hi, we were last here in October with an organizational update, and we're pleased to be back again at your invitation to provide an update on how the past 7 months have gone. We think you'll be pleased by our news. We're happy to have Tim join us for a few days in Newport Beach in March for our client conference that we had every 3 years, where he was able to really engage with a wide variety of PIMCO professionals. And of course, we had Jerry and John probably about a year ago in our office. So always welcome you as trustees to come down and meet more of our colleagues. Today I brought again Jay Jacobs. He's the president of PIMCO. He joined you all in October and also met with Jerry and John during the visit last year. And so what I thought, since kind of first order of business is to provide an update on how PIMCO has managed its leadership transition over the past 7 months, to turn that over to Jay. And then if there's time and interest, I'm happy to review the performance of the three strategies that you invest with PIMCO.
Okay. Sound okay?
Perfect.
Okay, great. Thank you, Stephanie, and thank you to all the board and staff for having us here today. We appreciate the continued trust that you've placed in us, and there's been a lot of communication, a lot of developments over the last 7 months, and we're looking forward to updating you on that. I think, as Stephanie mentioned, we have a good story to share, and we're grateful to have some of your time today to talk through it. As we've engaged with clients and with consultants, I think that really a couple of areas have been of particular focus. The first is around people, and how is PIMCO doing in terms of talent and the human capital of the firm. And then secondly, how's performance? And usually that's a discussion around investment performance. But in these kinds of times, it's also a discussion around financial performance. So I'd like to cover both of those areas for you and take any questions that you have in that regard. Firstly, on the people side, when we were here on October 16th, we faced a lot of rumors in the marketplace and among clients that there would be a brain drain, like a lot of speculation, would there be a brain drain at PIMCO? And so I offered some comforting words then, but you know, we really didn't know exactly the path that we would be traveling. We felt confident about our staff and the stability of our organization. The great news is that contrary to those rumors, it's actually gone completely in the other direction. So we've been adding talent over the last 7 months. Immediately following the transition, we welcomed back three members of the PIMCO team who had been with us previously. The first was Mark Seidner, who came back as a CIO for us in non-traditional strategies. He had been a managing director with us from 2010 to early 2014. Jeremy Benet came back on our real return desk. He's one of the best inflation-protected traders out there. And then Dr. Michael Spence, who's a Nobel Prize winner in economics, he rejoined us as a consultant. We felt like we were off to a good start. Since then, we've also hired Joachim Fels, who has been Global Chief Economist at Morgan Stanley and has joined us as a Senior Economic Advisor. We have added Gene Sperling, who was an Economic Advisor to both the Clinton administration and the Obama administration. He's joined us as a consultant. And then last week we announced that Dr. Ben Bernanke, the former chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, was joining us as a consultant. And Dr. Bernanke is only going to work with two firms in the business. He's still going to do some speech making and that sort of thing, and he's writing a book. But he has only two firms that he's going to work with. One is Citadel, the big hedge fund from Chicago, and the other is PIMCO. So we feel very honored to have him on board for what is a multi-year arrangement to work with us as a consultant. We did have one departure of a managing director, a full-time managing director. That was Sawmill Parikh. He left in January, and Sawmill was an excellent colleague. I believe the board met him and he managed your portfolio for a period of time, or one of your portfolios. He's taking a year off, and we don't know what he's going to do next, but we wished him well. I'm sorry to lose him, but I think that the quality of the hires that we've made and the numbers of hires that we've made really, really overwhelm any of the losses on the talent side. The last point I would make, and we're beyond the founder era in PIMCO, so we're well into the next phase here. But I guess I would make one comment about the departure of Bill Gross. We have not had a single person leave PIMCO for Janus, where Bill Gross is gone. Now, I'm not going to sit here and bet my life that no one will ever leave. Anything is possible, but I think it's very instructive to step back and just note that with the departure of such a senior investor, that there hasn't been anybody else follow in that direction. And in fact, our retention rates have actually been higher as a firm in the first 4 months of this year than we normally experience. So thinking of it as attrition rates, they've actually been lower for our firm than they would be in average years. So we'll have a normal level of turnover as a firm, but we feel great about the talent, we feel great about the leadership on the portfolio management side, and we feel very good about the people that we've been successful in adding into the group. Okay. Pause right there. Yes, sir.
So for us, the last time you were here was the big question of, okay, after bonuses go out in January or February of this year, right, what was the change going to be? And so what you're saying is you've only lost one person, and that person is indicating that they're taking a year off. They haven't gone to any other firm.
That's correct. From the managing director ranks on the portfolio management side.
And his name again?
We had a couple of retirements. Sawmill Parikh. P-A-R-I-K-H. Sawmill, S-A-U-M-I-L is his first name.
Yeah, and it'll be a test on the spelling later.
Sawmill, a couple of years ago, he managed the Stocks Plus portfolio for a time. And we understand that he's taking a year off. However, we do think that he has arranged, you know, future employment in the investment arena. It just hasn't been disclosed which firm, and we understand it's a different role, a role that he did not have at PIMCO or have an opportunity to pursue at PIMCO, an asset allocation role.
Okay.
But we don't really know the details.
Just on a general investment comment, could you comment on where you stand net outflow on total return, and you know how it's tracking
for
you?
Sure. So we have the total return fund was on September 26th, it was approximately $220 billion, and today it's $110 billion.
Yeah, okay.
So we've had we've had right at $110 billion in outflows in the fund.
Is the hemorrhaging slowing?
Yes, absolutely. So. Last month it was less than $6 billion, which is the lowest month. It's come down every single month from October, with the exception of December. There was a little tick up, which was kind of a year-end effect. You had some 401k plans and others, but it's come down. I would also note that even in the face of those substantial outflows, the fund has been a top quartile performer. So we have taken care of both sets of shareholders, those who were sticking with the fund and those who redeemed the fund. And so that top quartile is both from the day of the transition to today and also year to date. So the fund's been a pretty consistent good performer. And we've met every liquidity demand along the way. Those requests are declining. And so we feel very good about the way that situation's been handled.
Thank you.
Jay, do you see any market impact on what was in the journal a couple of days ago that Vanguard's equivalent to total return fund is now bigger? You've lost that mantle of being number one for all the years that you had it.
So we don't see any market impact to that. I think that the discussion around active versus passive is, you know, usually a pretty robust discussion in the marketplace. What I would note is that we would argue that the numbers, the performance numbers of the total return fund and our active strategies speak for themselves versus the passive options. So when you really put the Vanguard Fund next to the Total Return Fund, our performance is substantially better, you know, with an index-like volatility in the fund. Stephanie, would you want to add any comments there?
No, I mean, I think what Jay said about the fund versus Vanguard is absolutely true. I think an index fund and fixed income is quite a different choice than an active strategy. And it, I think, you know, over the short term, it may be indicative of investors feeling like they needed to move out of the commingled vehicle but didn't know what to do and maybe are waiting to make a decision about returning to an active manager. So, you know, speculating here, but I would imagine that some of those assets shift back into active management at some point in time. I did want to add, though, to tack on to Jerry's question, while the Total Return Fund has, of course, garnered a lot of headlines regarding flows, and those outflows have tapered, what I think is often missed in the headlines is that we've had over 40 PIMCO mutual funds that have that had inflows in April. So our income fund, managed by Dan Iveson, our enhanced equity funds that are similar to the enhanced equity strategy we manage for you, investment grade corporates, emerging market bonds, a strategy called diversified income, which is a multi-credit strategy, all saw inflows on a net basis in April. So there's a lot of good going on. There are a lot of there's a lot of investor interest in strategies PIMCO manages. I think, though, you know, the newspapers still like to cover the Total Return Fund because it was such a large fund, or it still is a large fund.
To put that in a little more context as well, a couple of comments. Our assets were actually up several billion for the month of April versus the end of March overall for the whole firm. Now, some of that's market, and we also received some significant inflows from our parent company, not an unusually large inflow from them, because we manage about $400 billion for our parent company. But net-net, our assets were up. So I think that also speaks to the stability of the organization. To also put a little finer point on what Stephanie was mentioning, the Total Return Fund tends to get 100% of the headlines, or a lot of the headlines. But in reality, and core bonds, certainly that's where we started as a firm. It's what we feel like we're still one of the best in the business at managing core fixed income, including for you. And yet, in the broad context of PIMCO, it's less than 20% of our business. So it tends to be exaggerated in terms of the media and PIMCO's overall reliance, if you will, on that particular area. So again, it's hugely important to us. We're very, very focused on delivering performance there. It's what we're best known for, and it's one of the things that we think we're best at. But we have to put it in the context of the broader firm. You know, it's not, it doesn't equate necessarily to the same level of headlines that it tends to get in the media. And the last point I would just make on that is that it's fun to be the biggest. It's much more important to be the best. And the performance is really, you know, at the end of the day, what will separate, what will separate firms over the long pull. And that's what we remain focused on, is performance.
At the risk of doing exactly what you're trying to get us not to do, and that's focusing on total return.
That's okay.
I'm just trying to do the math a little bit. On page 7, you indicate that their total return, the assets, are $141 billion as of March 31. But I think I just heard you say that it's 110.
So that's total return would be all of the total return style strategies we manage for the fund, as well as portfolios for clients. So it's custom portfolios for clients plus the mutual fund.
So you're saying the 110 is a large subset of the 141?
Correct.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Correct. Right. And just to put that in context, so nearly two-thirds of the outflows that we've experienced have been in that core fixed income complex, the total return and other core strategies. That's really been where the focus is. And by and large, these were portfolios that were managed by BOGROS, including the fund.
Can I speak more broadly to flows at the firm level as opposed to the funds?
Sure. You know, as I just mentioned, it's been about 110 in the fund and about 90 more in the core area. If we put this in the context, though, of the overall firm, we have had a decline of about 15% of our assets. And equity managers, if it were a market correction, that could happen in a matter of weeks for an equity manager. And normally in that kind of situation, there wouldn't be a lot of concerns raised around, organizational stability. Now, we obviously had a different factor in that we had a third of our three founders depart, and there were related elements around that, which I completely acknowledge. But from an organizational stability standpoint and strength of our financial position, it remains very, very strong. So we had, our bonus pools, we took good care of people at the end of the year. We'll have strong bonus pools again this year to make sure that these retention elements are addressed. We remain a profitable firm. We're a significant contributor to Allianz. I know that's always a delicate topic with clients because you pay our fees. So we're looking to strike the right balance there. But of course, profitability of the organization is going to equal stability because obviously we need to be able to pay the people who man the Bloombergs and who come out to see clients and who take care of our business. So I think we're in good shape there. On the expense side, this is also probably not well known, but about 50% of our expenses are variable in nature. So some of that is related to compensation. Another big component of that, though, is that our back office operation is handled by State Street Bank, and they've been doing that for about 15 years now. There are over 1,000 people at State Street who support our business. And that fee arrangement is based on assets under management. So as assets come down, it has a corresponding effect on reducing our back office expenses. So that gives us a lot of flexibility in our profit and loss statement that that gives us a high degree of confidence in our ability to navigate the current flow picture.
State Street.
With a 50% decrease in assets and only one departure from the firm, it would make sense that maybe there's been some individuals that have moved from working on the total return fund to maybe some other funds or other sections of PIMCO. Has that been the case?
So 15, right? 1.15 in terms of the decline. We've actually added portfolio managers overall. So there will be people within the organization, not really on the portfolio management side, who we likely will move into other positions, particularly if we have attrition in, say, an operations area or a technology area. We may move some people around. That's not likely to be the case on the portfolio management side. So we've added resources to the total return team in that we have three co-managers of the fund now, and we've added resources overall in portfolio management. So that would not be an area where we would be really repositioning people or pairing staff.
Jay, to sort of go back to Gail's question, it was 50% on the total return fund.
Oh, 50 on the total return fund.
Yeah.
Expanding on that, maybe another way to ask the question is, how many people were needed to run it at 220, and how many are required at 110? Is there a significant difference? What happened to that differential?
No, there's that. I mean, first of all, the fund's still a very sizable player, and among active fixed income funds, it's still the largest fund, right? Only the Vanguard fund, which is a passive fund, is larger. But there have always been a lot of resources contributing to the fund, and there continue to be. So we haven't, if anything, we have more people working on the fund than we had before. But it's always been a team effort.
Yeah, I think.
Does that sound counterintuitive to you that you would actually have fewer people?
A little bit.
It's just the process has always been pretty collaborative, but certainly Bill Gross had final say over the fund. It's even more collaborative now, and we feel like that's coming through in a positive way in the results.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember the investment process of PIMCO is very team driven. Off of ultimately, the starting point is a is a top-down macroeconomic forecast in which a large group of investment professionals participate, and then it's distilled down into strategy sessions with the portfolio management group and four times a week investment committee meetings. And the key themes that are deployed in the total return strategy or other fixed income portfolios really come through that process and come from that investment committee. And so that team of investment talent that pools their ideas that are reflected ultimately in the fund and executed by Scott and Mihir and Mark in this fund, previously executed by Bill, that team and that investment and that investment talent has just grown over that time.
And I apologize for misunderstanding the 50. I follow now. I would add one other comment. When we were here in October, we discussed whether another firm, for example, whether Janus would be able to replicate, you know, what we had. And at the time, I said yes, but for $1 billion a year is what it would cost them in expense. And I stand, you know, by that statement, because that's the size of investment that we have in our investment team. So I offer that up because I think it speaks to the breadth and the depth and the quality of the resources that we bring forward. And we're not, you know, to manage a portfolio, one thing that helps with scale is that you don't necessarily have to add a lot of resources, because you can just add a zero to the trade ticket as the fund gets larger. But the same thing is true with, you know, with the in reverse, with a smaller fund, you still, to deliver the performance, you take a zero off the trade ticket, but you still have to have the resources there, the human capital, the investment process there to deliver the performance. And that's certainly not an area where we're going to be, where we'll be cutting staff or paring back on the expense side.
I had sort of a broad question. Just to the touch of background, Bill Gross obviously represented a star in what had become a star system, that he was synonymous with PIMCO. I think in general public's view of PIMCO. And anytime you go through an exit of a star like that, you go through a very difficult period. That's almost inevitable.
Right.
My question is, with now a year of hindsight, is there anything you would have done different from the date of his departure until now, as you look back?
We did a tremendous amount of client outreach during that period of time. I can't really think of anything.
It wasn't a trick question.
No, I know. I know.
And from my seat,
could have fooled me, John.
What I've seen from my seat are, you know, where we lost assets or even clients, largely were clients who didn't know us very well. So obviously on the retail side, they don't come in and spend time with us. But even on the institutional side, we have lots of investors who either don't have a travel policy to come and really understand the team of investment talent that we have, or they may be invested in smaller size and funds. And so if I, you know, could wish to replay everything, I think I would have, operating from the client side, worked more to have people come in, tried to get a budget to help them, you know, travel in to meet the team. Because what I found was among my clients, not a single one who came in to the office to due diligence us in that period took assets. And we've been fortunate to have had a lot of engagement with clients who've been longtime partners. I think if we could have strategized in advance, it would have been, how do we connect better and engage better with clients who haven't had an opportunity to know us as deeply over the years? It's, I guess, a little bit less of a you know, star question, but I think when you do come in or when you do engage with us over many years, you get an idea for how talented the team is and how large the team is and how well we all kind of work together across a variety of investment strategies.
I thought of one while she was talking. It's a pretty small one, but it's important. We had two accounts in Asia where we made changes of portfolio managers as we moved some of our personnel around, and we lost both of those accounts as a result of that change. And it would have been as simple on our side as not making the change at that time and discussing that with the client later. And that's a mistake on our part to have made that switch. So that's kind of those are micro type examples as opposed to big macro. But you know, every relationship counts, and you don't want to lose one like that on, you know, what they would call in soccer an own goal, you know, knocking one in your own net. So I think we were, to switch metaphors, we were dealt an incredibly difficult hand. And you know, we haven't played it, you know, I think we've played it pretty well, all things considered. I wish that the outcome were a bit better in terms of the outflows, but I'm pleased to report that they're subsiding, and that, you know, we're on the right path. And I'm also pleased to report that, you know, our people are dedicated to the firm and have stuck with us and believe in what we're doing on your behalf. Okay. If I could, if there are any questions, we'd of course be happy to take those. We of course welcome the opportunity to come back and see you anytime. I promised you 6 months ago that I would be back, and we made it back, even if the Giants did beat the Royals in the World Series about 14 days later.
You're still stewing on that? Get over it.
I'm trying to let it go.
Is there anything you would have done differently?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Should be in the bottom of the ninth. Anyway, I would have told Salvador Perez to stop swinging at high strikes, but high pitches. In any event, you know, we're going to be focused on stability of staff, stability of financials, and delivering investment performance going forward. We are dealing, of course, as every manager is, with a heightened regulatory environment, and that's something that we're very focused on. I fly to London after leaving you. I fly to London this afternoon, and that's a very you know, that's kind of a hotbed of regulatory activity there. I do want to call your attention. We had we have an SEC inquiry that's ongoing. It's been ongoing for about 2 years now. And it was first disclosed into the market back in September, just before Bill Gross departed. And no allegations been made against PIMCO, but I do want to bring it to your attention and assure you that we'll keep you informed on that if anything changes in that regard. It relates to the total return ETF, which is an exchange-traded fund, and it relates to the first couple of months of that fund's inception back in 2012. So we'll keep you apprised of that, but I wanted to make sure to raise that for you today so that you know, it's on your radar screen, because it was disclosed in the media back in September, but 3 days later, Bill Gross resigned. So for most clients, it kind of flew under the radar.
Without asking for state secrets, what's the nature of the inquiry?
Thank you. Right, so it's a little bit nebulous to us because, again, they haven't made any allegation against us, but the line of questioning that they've been on relates to the valuation in the fund of certain odd lot securities. So very often when you have a fund at inception, you just have maybe even a few million dollars, or maybe 50 million or 100 million. So very often funds are started both at PIMCO and elsewhere by buying odd lots. You have to diversify the portfolio. You know, sometimes you can't buy in a $1 million size. Very often you can't. And so the portfolio had odd lot securities in it. And so we use the same industry convention that everyone else does. There's one price for every security. And you know, that's whether you hold 100,000 of it or you hold 100 million of it. Everybody across the industry prices the same way. So they've been, they seem to really be zeroing in on that, and whether there was any issue with valuation of those securities at the beginning. We hold, no investor lost money in the fund, we would contend that there was absolutely nothing wrong going on there. But again, the SEC's been in an inquiry mode on this for about 2 years now.
This would be understating value? In other words, the odd lot would be slightly higher, I assume. So would be the thrust?
And again, we use best practice. We use multiple pricing services. We use the same practices that the rest of the industry use. So if they were to really zero in on this, it would be almost an industry-changing kind of viewpoint. You know, you'd have to really have some significant changes across the industry. But the question would be whether a full lot of a security versus an odd lot, you know, would those actually trade at the same price in the marketplace, or would the larger lot, you know, trade for potentially a higher price, and the smaller lot would have potentially more of a illiquidity discount? Does that make sense?
I would have thought it'd be the other way. So in other words, the odd lot would be a tenth of a cent more.
It would tend to be the other way. Just large trading desks wanting to have, you know, potentially larger issues and other pieces kind of being sort of tag ins. But everybody, every day, PIMCO and every other player in the market, they're, you know, odd lots moving around all the time. And again, you, as they go into a portfolio, they're priced by an independent service at the end of the day. And to avoid a lot of confusion, the industry uses one price per security, depending on the pricing service.
It sounds like it could be either way. Just
it's possible.
Odd lots could be either slightly higher or slightly lower.
It's possible. Right. But it would be more typical for an odd lot to trade for, potentially trade for less. But again, when funds are started, you typically don't have enough money to buy a normal lot size. So again, no allegations have been made. We'll absolutely keep you informed if anything changes in that regard. But I did want to make sure that that I flagged that for you, because both in Washington, as well as in Brussels, London, Berlin, you know, it's a very, very active regulatory environment right now. So that's another area where we've been adding people, is in legal and compliance. It's just it's a high degree of demand for those positions also.
As always, thank you very much for coming
in. Yes,
thank
you. Thank you, Brian. Thanks. Thank you to the whole committee. We appreciate the opportunity. Hope to see you again.
Safe trip to London.
Enjoy your flight.
Thank you.
6 months from now.
6 months from now. Maybe October. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.